You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. 10 long years of celebrities and the rest of us living messy lives with, hopefully, a real God in the middle of it all.
Ted Decker, folks, is New York Times best-selling author. He's a co-author of this latest, greatest book called Sovereign. He's the author of more than 20 novels, which means what, 39? Ted is best known for stories, which could be broadly described as suspense thrillers with major twists and unforgettable characters. Wow. Though he's also made a name for himself among fantasy fans as well. Born to missionaries who lived among the headhunter tribes of Indonesia, his parents' work often included extended periods of time away from their children. So Ted describes his early life in a culture to which he was a stranger as both fascinating and lonely. It's this unique upbringing that forced him to rely on his own imagination to create a world in which he belonged. And he's been playing with his imagination ever since. Mr. Ted Decker on The Drew Marshall Show. Ted, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to be with you, Drew.
Well, where are you right now? You're in Central, but where are you?
I'm in Austin, Texas. Actually, I'm a Canadian, by birth. I was born in Indonesia, but I'm a Canadian citizen. My parents became Canadian for ease of travel. So I'm technically still a Canadian.
Well, that's beauty.
Back up there.
Yeah, that's beauty, eh? So you were born in Indonesia, yes?
I was born in Indonesia, back in a tribe in the middle of the jungle. I was just listening to your bio. I love the way on your show earlier you say life is very messy, and we all go about in this messy life hoping there's a God at the center of it. Well, I grew up in a very, very messy place,
Yeah.
Amongst headhunters. Actually, my parents' coworkers were killed when I was 6 years old and eaten.
What's that book?
Lords of the Earth.
What is it?
Lords of the Earth. Peace Child, Lords of the Earth.
Tim, you remember that book Mel made us read at
Team
Ranch?
Yeah, they were out in the Amazon and Jim something or other.
Oh, that's different. That's totally.
These are different people that got eaten. Okay, sorry, different snack.
But I grew up there, and born there, grew up there, moved here when I was 18. Came back here to go to university. I went to in British Columbia. Was it I think Trinity Western University?
Yeah, great volleyball squad out there.
Oh, really? Yeah, I was there for a year, and I came down to the United States and married an American. I've been here ever since.
What part of Canada do you like the best?
Well, I love BC, although I got a bit cold in the winters. And I lived also a year in Ontario, in Toronto.
Where in Toronto did you live, Ted?
Off of Keele Street. Let's see, where was that? Keele Street, 401. I'm just guessing.
Yeah,
now,
sure, sure.
Okay, that's where I lived.
Nice. Nice. So of all the places in the world, like somebody told me you lived in Colorado with all the other real Christian authors.
Oh, well, listen. I tell you what, I started writing 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And for the first, I'd say probably until this year, I've always resisted calling myself a Christian author. Yeah, I wanted to kind of...
A Christian author who writes Christian fiction? Wouldn't that be the worst epitaph ever for you?
I mean, what is that? I never knew what that really was. What I am is a person, just like any other person, trying to understand what the heck this life is really all about. Hmm. Suspecting, knowing deep inside that there's something much greater than what I see, but not seeing that answer in religion or out of religion. And I write to discover. I mean, I've been obsessed. I think I came out of the womb and, the first thing I thought was, is this all there is? Something's wrong. Something's actually missing from what I'm seeing. And, I think being kind of, growing up I was the only white guy in a sea of native, black people. So I was always on the outside. So I tried to become a native. I mean, I tried very hard to become a native. Never could quite make it. Hmm. I could never run through the jungle as fast as they could.
No.
I could never, be... And then when I came to the United States or to Canada, I was the outsider. I was always the outsider, always peering into the cultural bubble from a position outside of it. So I became a great observer. But through all of that observation and watching the world around me, there are these massive questions. And that is, but who am I? Is this all there is? And I couldn't find it in religion. So when I was in my 20s, I became an atheist. I've had a wild spiritual journey, but that's why I write. I write to discover, and really, my novels are just like my journals.
So, hold on. You sound like a wandering autodidactic iconoclast.
That sounds like a label to me, and I resist it.
I resist that label in the name of Jesus. I'm trying to say is you are a pain in the backside of every community you're a part of.
Well, I have been that way for a long time. I think that's why so many younger readers, especially when I say younger, I'm talking about that generation of people that is like exiting the church in droves these days. They, 58% of Christians between the ages of 16 and 40 have left the church in the last 20 years, and most of them never to return. I mean, we're going through a massive shift right now. But, I'm an insider there. In other words, there's millions of people like myself who are discovering a profound awakening in the midst of this confusion that we think of as traditionally the church. I don't resist being called a Christian anymore. I just don't think very many Christians follow Jesus. And so it's like, okay, you know what? I used to judge Christians. 2 years ago, I made it my New Year's resolution to start loving Christians, to really love Christians.
Oh, you are so convicting me right now.
Oh, dude, it's so hard when you grow up in it. Because I found myself judging Christians for judging others. And I realized, oh, my God.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, well, nothing except, I'm judging too.
Mm.
So that makes me the same.
So it's called having the spiritual gift of hypocrisy?
Yeah, I mean, we're all hypocrites, aren't we?
Yeah.
And until we're not, until we actually let go of all of our judgments completely, we find no offense in the waves and the water that surrounds us. None. Only then can we step out of the boat. I mean, listen, only then can we actually follow this man named Jesus. But nobody's talking about that. No one talks about that. At least, I don't find them.
Hmm.
So, anyway, back to my fiction. I write to discover, right? I write to discover, so it's like that. I need to kind of change that bio, because that bio makes it sound like I'm just out there writing, crazy stories with wild twists. That's true, because I get bored easily, so I got to make sure my stories are really interesting.
Yeah.
But that's not why I write them.
Okay, listen, I've got 39 questions, so let me start firing away. First of all, you sound ridiculously, obviously it's radio, and I'm a radio guy, so I've got ears for this stuff, but man, you sound like Eric Metaxas, and just in the way you talk. Do you know Eric? Have you met him?
No, I haven't.
Eric just came out with this sort of definitive Bonhoeffer book last year.
Oh, really?
And, it's a thick, heady read, but it's not as heady as some Bonhoeffer stuff. It's actually very palatable when you compare it. But
that sounds interesting.
He's a brilliant man, and I guess what I'm saying is you sound like a brilliant man. Okay, let's move on.
Don't let me fool you.
missionary stuff, growing up over there, even the Canadian connection. Story sounds similar to a buddy of mine named Paul Young, who wrote the Shack.
Oh, Paul. I just had dinner with him last week. Paul is an awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah.
We grew up in the same island. We went to the same school. He was just a few years. He's a little older than I am. He's old. I just turned 50.
Hold on. Did you just say Paul's old?
Well, he's older, I said.
No, you said he's old. I'm sending him a text right now. Decker thinks you're old.
Jess, he is an old fart. Listen, I'm 50. He's 55 or 58. This guy's my brother. We grew up in the same. We knew the same people. We actually can sit in a cab and speak Dani, which is a tribal language, together, and also Indonesian. And it's really cool. So we have a very, very similar background.
That's unbelievable. Well, there were a lot of parallels there. Actually, Paul and I just had a conversation yesterday about. And before I get into more questions here, I just want to get a little shout out to a fan of yours. Terry Bannerman is a friend of mine I've known for a lot of years, and she has been bothering me and bothering me and bothering me to get you on the show. So there's at least one creeper in Canada of yours. Okay.
Well, hi, Terry. Terry, right?
Yeah, Terry Bannerman. Yeah, she said you got to get this guy on because he's nuts, and not nuts. She said he's not nuts from what he writes, but it's behind what he writes that I think you'll really enjoy his nuttiness. Drew is kind of what she was saying. So.
Well, I've actually had a couple of people tell me that about you as well. So.
Yeah.
But you sound entirely reasonable to me.
Stop it. I know you're a fan of Dallas Willard. Tough losing him just a short time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Divine Conspiracy was. I actually never got to meet him. I meant to a number of times, but and his departure was sudden. But the Divine Conspiracy was a really kind of an important book in my journey about 15 years ago. Yeah,
you know, I'm so glad you're an interesting person, Ted, because I typically, and you know, you've heard this before. You know, for media people to interview fiction writers, it's like it's like asking an instrumentalist, you know, what's that song about?
Yeah,
it can be hard to kind of get behind, you know, things and you know, I mean, come on, dude, you're creating a fictional work to take people on a crazy journey. Yeah, and but your stuff has point to it. There's method to your madness, like Paul Young's, and so I want to ask you this: in this sort of faith fiction genre or whatever the heck we're calling it, how is your writing different from, you know, for example, LaHaye and Jenkins?
Well, okay, I haven't read LaHaye or Jenkins, so I can't.
Well, the Left Behind books.
Right, so I haven't read those either. But
neither have I.
But I can tell you this: I write my writing. I think most of my fans, you know, I think the reason why I've sold like whatever 8-10 million copies is because people who are looking for a really authentic journey with really authentic questions. About the angst of life, and that are very vulnerable journeys, I gravitate towards my stories because my stories are essentially mirrors. They see themselves in the story. They're parables. They're absolutely parables. And I don't know how the stories are going to conclude. I take my characters and I throw them into terrible situations with very difficult questions and see what happens. And I write to discover. So I don't know if you know, Tim LaHaye or Jerry Jenkins or other people write that way or not. I certainly don't write to make a point.
Really? Really?
Yeah, really, really. Really, really. Like, when I've gone through my darkest times in life, you'll find my darkest novels about people like, for example, The Sanctuary or The Priest's Graveyard, where people are actually in prison. And I'm looking at religion like a prison because that's how it feels to me during that phase of my life. Now, you know, that was a few years ago.
That reminds me of David Wilcock's song, Three Sons. He does this sort of allegory thing where three brothers. Three brothers are there to divide. I'm totally interrupting and interjecting. My apologies. This is not a professional interview whatsoever. this song is called Three Brothers, and it's about three brothers who are sitting down to divide the father's estate, and each brother thinks they're getting all of it. And he parallels that story with Jerusalem, where you've got these three monotheistic religions that have landed on the same rock, and each of those three think they deserve it all. So I guess I'm paralleling the disdain for religion here.
Listen, you know, that and the use of fiction and or parable to explore reality. I mean, Jesus, 52 parables. He was primarily a storyteller. And, I mean, he taught by asking very difficult questions within the context of stories. It's a very beautiful way. In some ways, it's more powerful, more true than nonfiction. If you say, this glass bulb will break if I throw it against the wall. Okay, that is a hypothesis. It's an idea, purely in the mind. Now, you can put that into a story, a petri dish called a story, an experiment, and say, okay, now you pick it up, and let's throw it against the wall, you know? And we'll watch it vicariously through characters shatter or not shatter. In other words, you're taking ideas, and you're putting them to the ground through characters. And, of course, your readers and yourself as a writer, am that character. And I see, and it's amazing how... It's a safe way to explore very difficult things.
Yeah, but do you have people like, you know, the creepers who read all your stuff and you know, have posters on you on their wall? Do you have people writing you saying, you know, when you said that really dark, scary, nasty thing in the book, is that you? And are, like, how much of you are you really revealing, and do people actually pick up on it and then go, whoa, you're too weird for me, dude?
Okay, so my history, clearly you haven't followed my history, because you would know this, that I have, first of all, I don't have creepers, but I have people that, they've left a long time ago, okay?
Yeah.
The creepers have left a long time ago. I think it was probably about 8 or 9 years ago that I probably lost half my audience.
Why?
Because my novels got way too dark for them. So, and I gained millions of new readers who are younger mostly. My entire demographic changed. And there's still a bunch of people out there that read everything, that did read the early stuff as well, which was far more Christians. But I'd say that I lost at least half my audience, and that was kind of the hardcore church audience. Now I'm in a very unique place where I've gone through the really dark stuff, and now I'm writing stuff that is still very edgy, but with a lot more hope in it, just because that's my own spiritual journey is taking me there. You know, there's a beautiful book called Falling Upward by a man named Richard Rohr. If you haven't read that book, it's about how the first half of life almost always fails us. It's kind of like a seed falling to the ground and dying, and then new life comes, and life kind of follows that. Our journeys tend to follow that path, where everything we once thought would protect us and keep us safe and give us satisfaction and fulfillment gets to die and fall. And this is true with careers, too. So my career has been a wild journey. I'm so glad that it's... The last couple years in particular have been really beautiful for me.
Why?
But I had to go through... Well, because I've discovered a whole new understanding, just for me, of what it means to believe in... not about my true self and Jesus.
So, but you had to go through a hell first?
Well, I didn't have to go through anything. I just tell you what happened. And it probably mirrors most people's journeys. I can't say you have to do this to get there, no. But very often, as it turns out, is important to go into the valley of death to discover that death is only a shadow. If you run away from that valley, you'll never go in to discover the true nature of the darkness. And the darkness is not dark at all. It's only a shadow. And the light is seen beyond that shadow. So, yes, it's important. I think it's the only way into the light is through the darkness.
Okay. We're running out of time here, and I've got to get to this. Well, man, it's so easy to talk to you. So here's the deal. You said in an interview that your father's the person who most influenced your life. Is that still true?
I would say, as far as any human being is concerned, yeah.
Yeah, because you said, and I quote you, although you could have been misquoted, it's because he was a real Christian.
Yeah, and that was probably 10 years ago.
Yeah, so what's changed, and what's a real Christian? Has anything changed?
I would say I have changed. Not I, but my understanding of myself has changed. So I have changed, and I would say that's absolutely true. A real Christian is somebody who's genuinely looking for the truth within this man named Jesus, as opposed to the religion of Christianity. So that was my father, you know, and that doesn't mean, I mean, he goes through his own journey. He had his own foibles. He crashed and burned in his own way in many different ways. And through it all, however, he had a very authentic, genuine devotion to discovering truth.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he's still alive. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful man. And by the way, in his 80s, and just the other day he said to me, he says, Ted, I'm becoming a convert. Now, there's an authentic man. You know what I'm saying?
You mean a convert to your books?
No, just to some of the ideas we were talking about.
That's funny. Okay, but from the sounds of your journey, though, Ted, when you were growing up, he was pretty busy doing stuff for Jesus and maybe wasn't spending a whole lot of time with you.
Right.
That would piss me off.
Well, I did have, you know, I did have a chip on my shoulder. I held a grievance against him, against my parents for some time, until I realized that the grievances I hold against anyone, including them, only hold a sword over my own head. And so, yes, I can keep myself in this place of self, you know, emulation. I mean, I can destroy myself, put myself in hell as long as I want, but it's because I'm doing it. So then I learned to forgive, let go, which has nothing to do with them, has nothing to do with me.
But it was part of your journey into atheism, the whole way you felt about your dad giving more time to Jesus than you?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all, because at that point, I came off the mission field with just a very clear understanding of who I was, only discovered that wasn't me at all. It was just what I had been told. And then I started reading, of course, all the philosophers and became an existentialist and I said, wait a second, how do I know God exists? Look, I went through a very typical journey. And then woke up one day realizing, oh, my God, I don't know if God even exists. In fact, I don't really see any evidence for that anymore.
That's exactly where I am at right now.
Well, it's not a bad place to be. As long as you're genuine about it. In other words, because that leads to something else. You're exactly where you're meant to be at this point in your journey. It's okay. You can trust your father, even if you don't know who he is. He knows who you are, and that's the real answer. That's the real question. What does God think of you, not what do you think of God? But listen, we could talk for hours about this kind of stuff and about our own journeys and stuff like that. I mean, this is my whole life. My whole obsession is writing about this stuff. So you just happen to catch me, in between books where I took an interview. And I've also sworn off the media, too, But I'm coming back out of my shell these days, maybe.
You've sworn off the media? Why? Because ridiculous, surfacey type BS questions?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you sound very different. It's like, wow, there's not very many of your kind in, south of the border down here that I'm aware of. Maybe I need to move back to Canada.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's still cold, dude. It's still, right now it's like 900.
I'll come up there in the summer then.
Yeah. There's a little cabin up on the lake. You can come and create. Actually, I had a friend of mine from California came up during autumn, the beautiful sugar maple leaves and, just the whole crispness of autumn. And he wrote up at the cottage for like a month and a half. So, I'm sure you have cooler places to go to than my cottage. Ted.
That sounds fascinating, though.
Ted, let me. Last question. Give me some dirt on Tosca.
Some dirt? Well, I'll tell you what. She is one finicky writer. I mean, writing this book, Sovereign, which, by the way, is part of the Books of Mortals, a whole trilogy about what it means to be human.
Hold on. You're stealing my thunder. That's my job at the end of the interview to say all that stuff.
Okay. Now, I'll just tell you about Tosca, who I co-wrote this with.
Yeah.
And we truly co-wrote this, meaning we both wrote every page. And we're very different styles. She's very beautifully poetic prose, and I'm like a Neil Brighter, intense plotting, and keep it to the ground and keep it moving. But she, the dirt on her, if it could be considered dirt, it's like she's so picky about every word and every sentence as a writer. And I think it's kind of like an obsession. I think she might be actually ill. No, I'm joking.
Oh, I know she's ill.
I'm joking, but all writers are a little bit ill in some respects, very, very obsessive. And her obsession, of course, is what allows her to write such beautiful poetic prose and novels. But she is a very, very, she's very obsessive about words.
Well, I gotta interview more fiction people because, between you, Tosca, and Paul Young, the three of you, I've just been tremendously beautiful conversationalist with myself. I've just enjoyed so much this chat, the time we had Tosca on the show. I mean, Tosca and I had a great chat off air as well during 1 week. Just really neat people, and there's way more depth than I ever thought a fiction writer could ever have.
Well, but let me tell you this, Drew. You are talking about like three of the 1,000 writers who write Christian who happen to be in this particular vein. There may be a few others. So I don't know how that happened to you. Obviously, there's something there. Paul Young, actually all three of us write the same way for the same reason, ultimately. So it makes sense that you would
resonate
enjoy all three of us.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
We're like you. We're just like you.
Yes, and I love me.
Hey, listen, that is one of the most difficult things in the world to learn to do, to really love you, not your body.
Well, easy now. I'm so sorry it's taken me so long to get you on the show, but having just heard what I heard, apparently if I had tried, you would have snubbed me. So the timing of this is perfect. Ted Decker, New York Times bestselling author, co-author of the latest greatest one called Sovereign. He's co-authored with former Drew Marshall Show guest Tosca Lee, and it is the much-anticipated final installment in the Books of Mortals series. Ted Decker, I really appreciate your guts. I actually do. Thanks, man.
Well, it's been an honor. Anytime, just let me know. I'll be on your show.
Thanks, Ted. Take care, dude.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care, dude. Who finishes an interview like that?
You do, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. I say that a lot, don't I?
Yes.
What did I say that? Oh, this is Three Brothers by David Wilcox. Let me shut up and let David Wilcox explain what I was talking about earlier. TedDecker.com, 2 Ks. Ted Decker, 2 Ks.
All three brothers love their father, and he's brought them here today to see these papers and these lawyers and divide the old estate. All three feel that they're the favorite. He loves each of them the best. These documents he gave them, we'll now put them to the test. So they open all the writings that will prove the rightful heir to this home that they remember, the right to settle there. Their own sister is a prisoner. They don't see her face to face. They've not heard her song of beauty, or felt the movement of her grace. She lived behind those bars of steel and waits for her release. Will she die or will we see Jerusalem in peace? Each one looks at what he's given, he studies what he's shown. They hold their maps that show possession to this place they've called their home. At first they sigh with satisfaction when they see what's on their map. Each one's given all he wanted, but the boundaries overlap. So do you wish us to be brothers? Father, help us understand. Or will we each kill off the other? This same piece of land. Do you mean there to be hatred in this place you built to last? Sister Faith, just die a prisoner in the dungeon of the past.